is on.
Introducing Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. Stories of everyday women breaking barriers and building wealth through real estate.
Skinny Boss. B-O-S-S.
Hello, hello. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Washington, and I'm very excited. I got an amazing guest again for you all today. Her name is Laquita Chancey. She is a Baltimore native, and she has an organization called Smaltimore Homes, where she's trying to combat homelessness, housing insecurity in all areas of Baltimore. And she's got a lot more going on, so I'm going to talk all about that today. First and foremost, Miss Laquita, how are you?
I am very well. Thank you so much for having me here, Miss Washington. I appreciate you sharing this platform with me, so thank you.
I appreciate you for coming on and taking some time to talk today. So let's jump right in. First off, how did you get started in real estate?
Yeah, so I got started in real estate doing a for-profit business. Baltimore used to have these, they used to have the dollar houses, but it wasn't that. It was very much, do these houses have an excessive water bill? And if so, you can buy the deed to this house. So when I got started, I didn't realize how predatory and how bad that was, but that's how I got started. And then when I realized, oh my God, we are like taking whole houses from people for a fraction of the cost, this is problematic. I definitely stopped doing that. And Baltimore has also since stopped doing that. But that's how I got started. I bought a house in Baltimore for $638.
Wow. So let me talk to you. Let me throw a curveball real quick, because now you didn't lead me down another path. So Baltimore was doing these dollar houses and people were all excited, but, you know, obviously they weren't really a dollar because, you know, you had to pay back taxes, like you said, water bill. Tell me more about that experience.
Yeah, so it was basically a poop show, girl. It was a poop show, okay, because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't understand it. Now I have a much clearer vision, but to answer your question, like in Baltimore, the infrastructure doesn't exist under a lot of these vacant and abandoned homes. So before you do anything, you're giving BG&E $10,000 to $20,000 to come out and make sure that the ground is good for electric. You're giving somebody else $10,000 to $20,000 to do the sewage, because already a tree has either grown through the house and the sewage, and or both of them or one of them. And then electricity is probably like a $5,000 investment, but when it comes down to it, it's like, dang, I'm at $50,000 and ain't no property on the house, on the land yet. So as I was working through those things and realizing that, dang, I could buy a vacant lot, or I can buy a house that someone's living in. But then I realized, okay, if I buy the house that someone's living in, I'm literally like displacing somebody through this, or I could work with them, or I could gift it to them. And that's what I ended up doing. Like, here, just go ahead and take that. I'm not even participating in this. This is predatory. Boom. Now you don't have a lien on your house, and I understand this a little bit better, and we're gonna go our separate ways. So I didn't even participate in that. But when it happened, all these lawyers started emailing me and contacting me like, hey, you want to take over this house? We can do the title work. It'll be $600. It'll be $2,000. Come to find out, the title work is, you know, like with any other house, you can get an agent to do it, you can get a lawyer to do it. But it was just interesting to see all these different price ranges and to know exactly what they were doing, because I've been through buying a house before. And it's just like, wow. So there's like this whole like predatory situation that so many people are participatory in. And well, that's why Baltimore looked the way it looked. Like, if you're able to buy a house and displace somebody and then not have any sort of like any connection to continue to redevelop, or, you know, grow community or whatever it is, you can just let that house sit and go on about your day and won't be fined. And that's why Baltimore looks the way it is. But that's how I gave it back. I was like, y'all can keep that. This is not for me. This is bad for my heart. And I stopped participating in that.
Okay. So it is, you know, widely known, and I guess Boston was very notorious for this. There is a lot of abandoned houses, a lot of blighted communities. Like, they tried this dollar house program, and, you know, it wasn't really what it says it was. So I guess since you're out here every day, what maybe are some of your suggestions for how Baltimore can make it a little bit more developer friendly without being predatory?
Right. So all different things. I think of the tiny home that you see behind me, the 20-foot tiny home on wheels, but this would face all of those things, meaning I would have to get the BG&E to come out. I would have to get the sewer and septic. I would have to get the electricity. But really, the way this house was built, all it needs is an electric connection and a hose hookup. Mm-hmm. So it would be great if Baltimore could be more lenient on some of those things in specific cases, or consider it for maybe the first year that somebody is getting their tiny home set up. Because for me, I have found that a lot of people love tiny homes. And because Baltimore has all of these vacant and abandoned lots, tiny homes would be great to infill them. Mm-hmm. We would not have to worry so much on redoing the infrastructure if Baltimore became more lenient. And then it would make it more affordable, because at $50,000 or $30,000 at the beginning, just to get the infrastructure ready is like, oh, well, I ain't got time for that, nor do I have the money, nor is a bank going to fund that. So where is that money going to come from? So my idea would be to legalize tiny homes, be lenient on the way that, you know, the infrastructure has to exist. And that leniency will allow for different types of innovation to come about. And we can see why this is a thriving model over on the West Coast. There are tiny home communities that lasted 20 and 30 years. So mm-hmm. I think Baltimore could adopt that just by infilling some of these vacant lots. We have 14, 15, 16,000 of them, and increased population, because people would come to Baltimore if the tiny homes existed. At least that's how I see it.
Okay. And then, you know, where there's abandoned neighborhoods and properties, that's, you know, creates more of an influx of crime as well. So if you got people living, thriving, working in these communities, you can hopefully reduce the crime as well.
Exactly. So, but to your point, they're living, thriving, and doing what needs to be done right now. So bringing more people will just improve it and create a better environment. So thank you for adding it.
Yeah. So your organization, Smaltimore Homes, you do exactly that. You build tiny homes. You build other types of structures for people that are transitioning out of homelessness.
Yes.
Or, you know, they need affordable housing. So tell me about, you know, how you started that organization and, you know, what are some of the initiatives you're doing now?
Yeah, so I've always been obsessed with like miniature and tiny things. So when I first found out about tiny homes, like in 2010, maybe a little bit before then, I was like, oh my God, these houses are so cute. I need to have one. How does this work? Where are they in Baltimore? And I was like, oh, did a little more research. They're not in Baltimore. They're all on the West Coast. They're really big in like Australia and other countries. So I'm like, okay, well, let me just do some investigating. And what I found is that a lot of communities had tiny homes, like in the Eugene, Oregon area, in Portland, and places where the vacancy was almost zero. So mm-hmm. there's no vacancy and there's no affordability. Mm-hmm. Baltimore has tons of vacancy, but no affordability. So we're kind of unique in that way. But what I did find is that there's tiny home communities that have existed since the 70s and 80s. Some of them are specific to people who are unhoused. And I was like, okay, well, now that I see this is going on, y'all been popping all this time, I'm gonna start doing this in Baltimore. Started doing some research. There was already a group of folks who were trying to legalize accessory dwelling units, which is like a granny flat, smaller than a tiny home, generally speaking. Usually out in the back of someone's home. Think of it like your pool house or something like that, right? So, okay, there's some people working on this. Let me see if I can get in where I fit in. But what I began to find out is that the small group of folks that were interested in it didn't seem like they had spoken to the community, because it seemed like it was just their thing that they were interested in.
And like a lot of development projects.
Gentrifying.
But I digress.
Maybe. Okay, because let me just digress real quick, because I feel like gentrification is the new colonialism of the 20th century. So that's what we're going to, that's the kind of air I come about, right? And so I'm like, well, that's not what we're doing. We're going to actually find out who wants these types of homes. So I was already doing outreach. I'm like a Girl Scout, a Brownie. Those are the types of things I had already done. So I already had relationships with like Catholic charities, healthcare for the homeless. I had volunteered at all of those places before, started talking to them. What do you guys think about this homeless thing? What do you think about tiny homes? And just like all of a sudden, I was just like, you know what? Nobody else is doing this for these people here. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be the one. And I just found it. I decided to look up, well, how do you start a nonprofit? All right, let me do that. Did that in a weekend. How do you apply for a nonprofit 501c3? Did that in about 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, folks were telling me this is going to take 6 to 8 months. So get your board together, get your strategy together. Girl, that thing happened in like 4 weeks. They were like, here's your nonprofit thing. And I was like, oh, well, we got to do a fundraiser. We got to let the people know. And I had already started building this tiny home, like separate from Smaltmore. I just knew that I needed to see it or do it or have it, because that's just the way my mind works. Like, this will be easier if I have a thing that I'm working on, that I'm constructing, and this is where I can get buy-in. And that's kind of how Smaltmore Homes came along. But because it happened so fast, I applied for the nonprofit situation and the EIN in February. By April, we had our first fundraiser, and by June, I was building at the Baltimore Community Tool Library in Pigtown every month, therefore there and forward until COVID happened.
Mm-hmm. So how many tiny homes have you been able to build so far?
So I have this one, this 20 footer on a trailer. I have 5 8x8 shelters. And then I have 3 prototypes that are about the size of a picnic table. And they're also on wheels.
Okay.
And what I've found is that the wheels make it a mobile, mm-hmm. mobile transportation. People can't live in that full time. Making it permanent is what the city wants. So I'm leaning toward the models that are on a permanent structure, and so that I'm, you know, being compliant with the policy and the zoning, so that when I decide I don't want to do this anymore, people can maintain their homes and continue to thrive, and they won't be like thrown away like they do with the tents, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's, you said some of them you make are on wheels, or is it kind of like, you know, you take this shelter, makes it like a shelter from one area of the city to another?
Yeah, like that's how it started. Because in my mind, it was like, well, no one is designating a specific space where these folks can be safe. But they are finding spaces either that they feel safe or that they're under the radar. So I'm going to contribute to that by giving them something that is mobile and on wheels, so that when the authorities come and say you can't be here, they can put all their worldly belongings mm-hmm. and just drive and park at the next place. But what I found out, or what I came to realize, is that's a huge liability issue. What if this thing finds itself in the street and causes an accident? What if this thing catches fire? What if? Mm-hmm. So took a step back, and those shelters, they are installed around Baltimore at different places for people to see and engage with and interact with, but they're not something that someone would live in, and not something that I would say somebody lives in on tape, but I might tell you something different in person.
Right.
But that's the idea. Okay. So that's what we're working with. Yep.
Completely understand. All right. So one of the things that you also kind of are really passionate about is that Baltimore, like, you know, a lot of other urban or underserved, whatever we want to call Black right. communities, have been redlined, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we haven't been able to participate in as much of the building of wealth in our communities. And Baltimore is probably a city that we still
started it
far, far, far back, probably more than a lot of other cities in the country.
Yes, yes. So,
and I know your work has been published in books and whatnot. You talk about this often. So just tell me about like your thoughts on redlining and the progress we've made or the progress we haven't made in Baltimore.
Right. I thank you for opening that door because you are so right. Like the redlining in Baltimore is still very much apparent. Baltimore is a very segregated city, but it's kind of hard to see because there's so much Black population. Mm-hmm. There are still areas where we are very much, it's clear that we're not welcome, but the air of a Baltimorean is, this is my space. So get down or lay down, we're going to show up wherever we want to. But to your point, like the redlining has displaced so many Black families. And really, the sad thing is that it was intentional by urban planning. Like these are the people that are in charge of the city and they have allowed these things to exist. And the way that it has impacted Baltimore today is those redlined communities have the highest consistency of lead. They have the highest infant mortality rate. They have the lowest school system grading scales. They have the worst transportation, the worst digital equity, like all of these things are still plaguing these communities. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the system is doing what the system was designed to do, if you ask me. And so that is why we have to be advocates. We have to engage. We have to be a part of the decisions that are being made. I'm not going to say we have to be politicians because that's not my ministry. I can't do that. That's not for everybody, but I can organize community. I can engage folks. I can advocate for people who can't speak for themselves, like those who are unhoused. And so that's how I tend to get involved in all of it. But to your point, the book, The Black Butterfly, written by Dr. Lawrence Brown, that outlines like all of Baltimore's history, but then it goes a step further to say these are the solutions. And when it comes down to it, $3 billion to remediate the lead in Baltimore would be like a 180 degree switch, because it would change the way that children behave. It would change the way that people are engaging with one another. The fact that like it inhibits your emotions to even just be empathetic, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're often more violent. It's harder for you to concentrate. You don't learn as well. So these are things, because metal's in our body and it's in our environment. So the redlining of it all, we have incinerators and all of these things in the redlined communities. And that's typically the way that development and urban planning works. So talking to DHCD and being like, hey, we need these villages for LGBT youth, for mothers to increase their decrease infant mortality rate, to make sure that people aren't paying more than 30% of their income toward their rent. Like we have to do these things in a collective effort, because y'all messed it up. Like DHCD, urban planning, y'all created these roads that we're dealing with now. But as a community, we're still doing what needs to be done, but so much more can be done if you all were able to just bridge the gap, just fill in the spaces of what the heck is going on with the 14,000 vacant lots. Like if people were able to put tiny homes there or a community garden, like it would start to solve just the little incremental changes and we'd be able to get much further. But girl, the redlining is redlining. Today, it is still doing what it's supposed to do today.
Why do you think like Baltimore, I guess, has a slower, I guess, path of progress, even with gentrification, than some of the other cities? Like, you know, right down the street, DC is like no longer chocolate city. It's cookies
and cream. It's a latte.
Exactly. It's like every little space of speck of land that used to be vacant or whatever has been completely changed and transformed. So Baltimore right up the road, it's like, why is Baltimore's path of progress seem like it's so much slower?
So many different reasons, but for a lot of reasons, Baltimore City has been like ostracized. Like all the resources are going out and around Baltimore City. And so it's going to all the counties, including Baltimore County, which is separate from Baltimore City. And anybody in Baltimore will make you make that distinction. I was raised in Baltimore County and now I live in Baltimore City and I understand it. Mm-hmm. But as a child, I'm like, y'all right around the corner. It's the same thing. What are you talking about? But our school systems are different. Mm-hmm. Like the culture is different. Everything is different. And because Baltimore has been ostracized and kind of left to crumble on itself, that's what it has done. So it doesn't matter if we bring in a whole bunch of Black politicians or a bunch of Black leaders, the crumbling foundation still exists. So how do we get below the crumbling foundation to like build up? And it's really hard because no one seems to be doing anything for the people. It's really for the profit or the politics or the gram or something, but it's never for the kids, the youth, or whoever is actually being impacted. And I don't see it changing until that does happen. But that's also why I'm like, I can't be a politician because I'm gonna be out here doing whatever the hell it takes to get done, even if it's not above board, because people need housing, people need home, people need to have stability, security, and be sustainable. And I'm just so tired of seeing us like shucking in drops. Like, it's too much. We're not thriving. We're just barely surviving. Right. And so I'm doing as much as I can to, like, Baltimore, like, open your eyes. How can we think innovatively to solve some of these deep-rooted problems?
So, yeah, some of the things that you said, people aren't doing much, but you are doing a lot of stuff out here. Like, besides, you know, the initiatives with the tiny homes, you also rehab other actual houses. You was telling me you was at like, you do like a wellness walk every week at Lake Montebello. I went to an event of yours where you had a pitch competition where you were giving grants to women owned businesses. So tell me about some of these other initiatives you got going on.
Yes. You know what? Just thank you for this. Cause I forget some of the things that be going on. I'm like, oh yeah, that pitch contest. That was dope. Right. Thank you for coming to that. But that was for Black women in real estate, and specifically Black women, because in so many ways we're like at the bottom of the totem pole. My my background, I should say, is in computer science. And so I'm always looking at the data and the AI of it all. And Black women statistically make less than everybody often. And I'm tired of it. So any platform that I create is always going to be for women that look like me, that are going through what I'm going through. But also, look, bring your husbands, bring your kids, bring your uncles. I don't care. Bring the white people, bring the Indian people, bring the people from Australia. No one is not invited, but know that the marketing, the curation, this is designed for Black women. And that's all. And so we walk at Lake Montebello first and third Sundays with a doctor. We do some mindfulness, but the point is the doctor is there to engage with the community. It's free. We have food out there. And it's really for people to come and like meet resources, talk to people, get out and express yourselves. We started it in 2021 in the fall because, shoot, we needed to get out and walk. And then we were like, oh, invite other people. So again, it started with Black women walking and supporting one another. And then other people came in. But yeah, like whatever community connections look like that's how I want to show up. If you don't want to house folks who are housing insecure and you like, not in my backyard, I'm like, that's fine. Maybe we want to do an urban garden. Maybe we want to do some raised planters. Maybe you want to do a period pantry or a library pantry. Cause I know that some of these things are lacking in the community because I live in Baltimore and I just know, right? So however that looks is how I want to show up.
Right. And so many problems to solve, like, you know, whatever it is that can chip away a little bit at a time is, you know, worthwhile.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk about this because this is kind of like our ecosystem that we have here with Capital Impact Partners. And you were part of the Equitable Development Initiative Program in the DMV area. Mm-hmm. You were cohort one or two?
Two.
Okay, cohort two. I was cohort three. And it's like created this ecosystem of developers of color in this area. And I think it was fantastic. I love connecting with everybody that was in my cohort and in the past cohorts. You know, we got to really meet a lot of people that are moving and shaking in this development world. And hopefully, you know, we're a rising tide will lift all boats. So you one of yes. those people that have been doing a lot out here. So I want to talk to you. Just tell me about your experience with EDI, because it was a little bit different because y'all were like in COVID for
yes.
real. So tell me about your experience. And then what has it done to help you with your mission, you know, what you were already doing before then?
Right. Yeah. Shout out to Capital Impact Partners. Like, that was such a dope, like, delve and dive into real estate. I really feel like I will apply to all the fellowships, all the accelerators, all the things. Like, give me all the resources, pour into me, please. But there's like digging into like the performa of it all and the mentors that they gave to us. So dope. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think if I had, if I focused more on my for-profit business, I'd be able to benefit more from what Capital Impact Partners gave us. But because I'm like a stand in the gap kind of person, I'm like, so many people are already doing that. And right. I'm going to let them continue to do that. And I work with those who I feel are most marginalized. And what I've gained from Capital Impact Partners is I see Gina Merritt everywhere. She is everywhere in the DMV. And being able to speak to those familiar faces who are just on all of these boards and have access to all this information. I mean, you found out about the pitch contest because they sent out one of the flyers, right? Mm-hmm. So the connection of it all and the stickiness of it all is what I'm here for. Bree Jones, who is in Baltimore, she was in their first cohort, and she is doing phenomenal things with her development project in West Baltimore. I've been in touch with other people who have either came to volunteer with me or showed up and was a judge at the pitch contest. So Capital Impact Partners, I really do appreciate what they've done. Not to mention the fact that they're connecting all of us in the DMV in Baltimore does tend to be different. But as Black developers, I think we do face a lot of the same barriers
right.
systemically, yeah. regardless of what city we're in, right? Mm-hmm. And Capital Impact Partners was able to speak to that. Like, there's ways that we can, you know, increase our net worth so that we are eligible for these things, or these are the senior developers that you can work with so that you can be, you know, included on some sort of job. And so understanding like how to slice it and how to move forward, I think it's really helpful. I'm not ready to do any development work in the DMV latte area yet. I'm gonna stay right here in Black Baltimore. Mm-hmm. But at some point I'm gonna come out there, because where I'm at now, I'm just like, my budget can't afford what y'all got going on in the DC area, honey. Them lattes are expensive, and I am not a Starbucker, okay? Like, I'm a tea kind of girl. So I'm gonna just chill right here in Baltimore with my T-Volve, and that's going to be what we're going to do here.
Absolutely. But the thing that I love about it is, one, it taught you like the technical skills, like you said, the pro forma, because you can't be a developer without knowing how to talk the talk, and then get you those relationships, because it's a very well guarded industry.
It
so
is.
You got to have somebody that's going like open a little crack in the door for you to step in. So,
yes. And like I said, Gina is that person in so many ways. Mm-hmm. There's just so many dope folks that they put you in touch with, and then they continue to pour into us. Like, they're sending us all these grant information and funding opportunities. I mean, even Capital Impact has their own funding arm now,
yeah.
right? Like, all of these things are super dope. So I appreciate anybody who welcomes me with open arms and then pours into me. I'm a shout to the rooftops. Yes, Capital Impact Partners. Y'all keep applying. They are looking for some dope Black women and underrepresented minorities to apply to their situation.
Absolutely. So what's next for you?
So what we're doing now is fundraising. I have identified 3 parcels in the Baltimore Oliver footprint, which is where I live now. So like basically in my backyard, I want to put this tiny home there and create a demonstration plot. Like I told you, it's going to be about $35,000 to $50,000 just to kind of get the ground ready. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start to fundraise for that. We're going to put this guy on there and probably do a 8x8 shelter there so that people can kind of come and see. This is 20 feet. This is 8x8. This is 5x7. This is what we're doing in the community. And let's have a conversation about it. How can we make this better? How can we put this in your backyard? But that's what we're doing now. But in Baltimore, there are 2 tiny home communities that are being built. One right here in Oliver, in my backyard again. And then another one in Lauraville, which isn't far from Morgan State University. And that is really dope. And those are permanent structures. They are over 400 square feet. And those are really the only restrictions and requirements that they're over 400 square feet and they're permanent structures. I know that my thing is illegal because I'm on wheels and I'm only 264 square feet, but I can build bigger when I get bigger land, right? So we'll start with the demonstration plot, show it to some people, come on out, point, touch, see, take a picture, put it on Instagram, do what you do. And we're going to just continue to spread the word and get people excited. And then eventually, you know, enough people will have seen it to say, well, when are you going to do it for the homeless folks or the veterans or the women with children or the LGBT youth or the kids who age out of foster care or the seniors, all these marginalized populations. And I'm like, point to the space. And that's what we're going to start doing. And
absolutely,
that's the plan. That's the plan. So the manifestation is in the air, y'all.
Well, you already got proof of concept, and obviously it's a big problem to fill. So
that's the
somebody
thing.
Out there that believes in the vision is going to write that check.
Yes, and that's why I just keep talking. I keep showing up to things like this. Like one person is going to hear it and be like, you know what? This girl's doing some good work. Let me just give her $3 million, baby. Thank you. Thank you, Auntie Oprah.
Speaking that into existence, absolutely. Well, yeah, this was amazing. You're doing some super dope stuff. Keep fighting the good fight. I can keep talking to you all day, but I'm going to transition to the last segment of the show, which is the Fabulous Four. It's 4 questions I ask everybody on here. So first off, first question is, what is your favorite book about real estate?
I would say The Black Butterfly, but that's cap. I'll only say that because I'm in it. But Millionaire Real Estate Investor. The Millionaire Real Estate Investor, it like goes along with the Millionaire Real Estate Agent. Mm-hmm. But I'm not an agent kind of person. But the investor book, it like teaches you and talks to you through like building your team and growing and scaling. And that is often my problem, that I see this big thing and I'm like, damn, how am I going to get all the way to the top of that mountain? And so it has already like broken it down. So The Millionaire Real Estate Investor is one of the top real estate books I would suggest.
Okay, great suggestion. Second one is, what advice would you give to your younger self just getting started in your career?
What advice would I give to my younger self? Make more friends. Girl, I just don't stay in the office with people. Energy be weird. And I need to make more friends. I need to be nicer. So that's what it is. Because Black women, I love y'all. Like, I show up to y'all and I'm a glorious social butterfly flower. If we aren't in the room, I'm looking around real suspicious. Like, you look like you're going to be predatory or extractive. And I need to stop doing it. So this is what I'm working on, right? I'm telling my younger self to be nicer. And I am also embodying that today. I'm being nicer. So specifically, y'all, I'm gonna be real. It's the white men. Okay.
I mean, amen to that. But unfortunately, especially in this commercial real estate development, all of that industry, those are the people that have been leading the charge. So you got to have some allies from them some kind of way.
Yes. And that's what I'm working on. Look, I'm going to tell you what, allies are cool, but I need co-defendants. I need somebody that's going to jail with me and the clank, clank. All right. So co-defendants, shout me out. Allies, we're cool. And I'm going to just keep being nice to people and figuring out who's in it to win it for me.
Absolutely. All right. Third question is, what topic in real estate do you want to learn more about?
Oh my goodness. Topic in real estate. I want to build some high rises, bruh. Like, I want to build some luxury high rises, but luxury, because that's the language that folks use, but I want it to be affordable. Mm-hmm. And if I could figure out a way to have like an indoor outdoor pool for my people, sit, look, oh my God, and some unhoused folks, some veterans, and just like a whole eclectic community. Mm-hmm. I want to build a high rise, you know, 80, 70 floors or something. Mm-hmm. That's what she's interested in.
Yeah, because even though the, you know, buildings are affordable, that don't mean we don't still like nice stuff. We don't got to.
Hello? Hello? I mean, I like nice things.
Exactly. Okay. So the last one, it's not really a question, but can you please give a shout out to another woman in real estate?
Yes, I've already said my good, good girlfriend, Bree Jones, but also Atiyah Wells, who is a whole RN. She has Backyard Base Camp in East Baltimore. She has a 10-acre farm. They are redoing the farmhouse there. So Atiyah Wells, Bree Jones, Amber Jones, who was doing some dope stuff over in the Park Heights area. I know you said one, but I'm going to keep going if you let me. Mika Nancy, who is over at West Baltimore doing the damn thing. And she's more of an organizer than a developer, but still talk to her because she knows where the lots are. Let me think. Who else? Veronica Owen. She's in the Ashburton area, but she does grants all over Maryland. She has the Caterpillar program. And so these are folks that you didn't even get to meet because they didn't make it to the pitch contest. So Amber Jones, Bree Jones, they're not related. Mika Namdi, Veronica Owens. Like, these are all the dope people in Atiyah Wells. Yeah, so those are the women that I would like to shout out doing the thing in real estate right here in Baltimore.
Okay, and I know you're going to have another event coming up here soon. So all these people will come out and we're going to get together and, you know,
yes. Look, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to send you the information. We're doing some intergenerational healthy housing. We're getting the youth and the seniors to talk about adaptive housing and what that looks like. We're doing a landlord symposium. Actually, I don't like that language. We're doing a housing provider symposium in September. Dr. Brown will be our keynote speaker. So yes, please come to smalltomorehomes.org. Let us know what you want us to do out in the community, how we can connect. If you are interested in any of the things or the people that I talked about, I am not a gatekeeper. I share all the information. So just let me know what you need. I'm here for it. And thank you for sharing your platform. I appreciate this so much.
Oh, thank you. And you got to my next question was going to be, how do people get in touch with you?
BaltimoreHomes.org. That's 2Ls.org. I answer all the emails. So if it takes a while, it's because I answer all the emails, but I will be getting back to you. All right. So, but also remember, I'm at Lake Montebello, 1st, 3rd, and 5th Sundays at 9:30. All the other Sundays, I get there at about 10 and we walk around late. But my community and my office is outside. So y'all know how to find me if you really want to find me.
Right. She's accessible. You can find her. All right, cool. So this was amazing. Thank you so much for joining the show. Like, I'm really excited to see all the things that you have and the progress you're making in the community, you know, one small step at a time, because
it's a
village. Yeah, it takes, you know, a marathon.
A village. It takes a whole village to raise a Laquita. So it's going to take a whole village in all of Baltimore and the DMV to raise Smalltimore Homes. So thank you again for sharing your platform.
Amen to that. Yeah, appreciate you coming on. So lastly, any more, I guess, any last words of wisdom for the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, if you guys think you want to do something, like, just start to see if anybody else did it. Chances are it's not a new idea and somebody is doing it and doing it damn well. They might not be talking about it. They might be hard to find. But I'm not saying that you're not creative, but a lot of the ideas that we think are brand new have existed other places, and you could just take their blueprint, like, and then reach out to them and find out if there's a mentor or something. But don't let people talk you out of your crazy idea, because that crazy idea, you're going to keep going. It's going to fuel you. You're not going to care. You might care, but continue to learn and do what thrives within you, because at some point the money might not matter and you're going to continue to thrive and grow in that. And that's just where I like to be. I like to be where I'm thriving and growing, and helping folks is where I do that. So I give the same information to you. You got a crazy idea, pursue that joint. Hit me up. Ask me if it's really, really crazy. And we can talk through the craziness and make it sound sane to everybody else. That's all it is.
There you go. Absolutely. All the good innovative ideas started out with some crazy thought in somebody's mind. So,
and now it might be every day that we are using this crazy thing that was crazy back then, but now it's a part of everyday life, right? Absolutely. So yeah.
There you go. Well, oh, this was amazing. Thank you so much for joining me and preaching the good word on a Sunday.
What I can.
All right, y'all. This is another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. Thank you so much to my guest, Ms. Laquita Chancy, in Baltimore doing her thing. I'm your host, Jessica Washington, and we will catch you on the next one. Thank you.